This is FM 2.0 with the Don, Dean, Stormy, and the Grizz. Forever music.
Hey, everybody. And Dean, I might as well just announce the new show name now, right?
Yeah.
So the new show with Dean and I and Grizz is FM 2.0, and that is coming out, and that's where Brian's interview is going to go. And it's, again, focusing on the music, what artists are working on, especially artists that have had a good catalog and where they're headed with their new work and all that. And so we're really excited to do that, and that's coming out soon. So Brian Vander Ark is here from The Verve Pipe. Great to have you, man.
Thanks for having me.
Welcome.
Absolutely. Now, you're on tour. We just had Glenn Phillips on from Toad the Wet Sprocket.
Great guy. A lot of fun to tour with.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. What, because listening to Threads, the 2021 record,
right?
That really blends in well with the Toad crowd. But I noticed your set list is really a lot of throwing in the songs that people remember, like Villains and stuff. So, did you go into thought like that? Like, hey, we're going on tour with Toad, but we're going to just, what made you come up with the set list too? I guess that's what
I think there's an expectation for people, especially people that grew up listening to Toad, that, you know, they're going to, when they see the Verve Pipe, they might not necessarily know that we're, you know, we've been making albums for, you know, the last 20 years after the big album. So when you play with a band like that in open form, you get 30 minutes to 45 minutes. It's like in 45 minutes, if someone's never seen us, I want to hit them with all of our greatest stuff. Yeah. What we'll do though is we open up usually with a song off of Threads called No One's Gonna Break This Heart Again. It's got a nice dynamic to it. So it's a slow build, and then it becomes this big anthemic thing. And it's been going over phenomenally, and we're selling a ton of records because of that. So the set list on the Toad Tour is much different from our own show. When we do our own show, we'll typically play for an hour and a half or maybe 2 hours. We certainly don't make people wait to hear the Freshmen until the encore. We're not that kind of band. You know, we'll put it halfway through. So if they just want to hear that, then they can get the hell out afterwards, as far as we're concerned.
Now that is an artist right there. Like, hey, we'll give you what you want in the middle.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, honestly, it's like we've always been a people pleasing band. You know, we like to entertain. We do. We have guest musicians that come in that I feel are entertaining and are gonna add something to the show. We've never been a shoegazer band. You know, it's just not our thing. Our thing is to be performers. And I feel like the way the ticket prices, the cost of the ticket prices and everything, people, I think that you have to satisfy their expectations somewhat, especially the hardcore fans. Now, hardcore fans, you know, I do house concerts on occasion. Hardcore fans don't want to hear the Freshmen. They don't want to hear Photograph. They want to hear the rarities. You know, they want to hear what's new that I'm working on. So I get a satisfaction from both. You know, from the solo stuff, from you know. I mean, many things, the solo stuff and the Verve Pipe stuff, but playing for a crowd who has certain expectations, they've never seen us before, and playing for, you know, fans that I know that are there because they want to hear the odd choices in our set list. So,
yes.
That was a long answer. Sorry.
No, I love it. I love answers like that. You know,
Brian, are you so both lyrically and musically, are you the primary architect?
Yeah. Channing Lee and I wrote Threads together. She joined us in 2014 as singing backup. And she's a terrific songwriter and terrific lyricist. She comes from the same school I do, which is, you know, I like to have a linear story to my songs, just like the Freshman was, you know. And so we collaborated because honestly, you know, I'm in my 50s. I'm running out of things to say, you know what I mean? And I still think, I mean, I've got plenty to say. But nothing anybody wants to hear. You know? Plenty to say that would get me in trouble, you know.
Right.
I ask because you've always written with a lot of textures, a lot of layers. That's been consistent throughout all the albums. So I've always been kind of curious. you know, where you draw that inspiration from. And even more recently, I'd say over the last, three albums, it really, when I hear them, I hear Beatles, I hear some like old Genesis, things that are make me think of it. Not necessarily that sounds like old Genesis, but it definitely makes me think of Peter Gabriel era.
Yeah.
What was your draw of influence?
I mean, I was, when I grew up, I was a huge Genesis fan. I actually got turned on to Genesis as a kid with, when Phil Collins was, when Phil Collins took over. So, you know, Duke was an album I played incessantly, drove my parents crazy. I played it all day. I love that prog rock. I love themes, you know, when an album is thematic. And so I draw a lot of my influences from that period of time. We have the ability, because we're an independent band and we have been since 2002, to do whatever we want to do. For instance, doing the kids albums, we do a couple of kids albums just on a lark to get back into the studio and just have some fun. And if I were to put an oboe on a Verve Pipe record, rock record, it would be really pretentious. You know what I mean? At least to me, I'd be like, I would never do that. Right. But we make, I love the sound of an oboe, and I think it's appropriate in some capacity in some songs, if it fits the song. If we put an oboe on a kid's song, then that one nerdy kid who plays the oboe, no offense to all the oboe player kids out there, you know, I don't know. You know what I mean about getting myself in trouble? But that one kid will go, oh my God, there's an oboe solo on this, you know, and that's exciting to me. That's exciting to me.
Well, I got to tell you, I love when oboe is used in rock. I'm a big fan of Within Temptation, and I like the way they use it. So if you ever choose to do that, you do have, I guess that makes me pretentious, but I would love it.
Awesome. You know, and you mentioned the Duke album, you know, just the songs Misunderstanding and Turn It On Again were songs that I would play on a loop.
Awesome. Right? Great. Yeah. Two of the, I mean, they're such terrific songs. And Misunderstanding's got that 50s kind of swing.
Oh, yeah. I love that song. It's
so classic. And, and his voice in that is just phenomenal. Yeah. But yeah. Peter Gabriel as well. When I was in the Army from 83 to 87. And when So came out, Peter Gabriel album with Red Rain and In Your Eyes. And, you know, I mean, Mercy Street. Huge, huge influence on me as well. So I would say that the pun intended, the genesis of my career had a lot to do with Genesis, frankly.
You know, actually makes a lot of sense then, because Genesis, even, you know, you think about their 80s and on their album, they never really abandoned prog. They had their pop hits.
Nope. Yeah.
They still had their prog rock pieces. And in the same way, you've done a very good job of blending elements of pop and mainstream sound, but with elements of prog as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm happy to hear that. I'm happy to hear that that comes across, because that's exactly what we try to do. You know, I love segues. We're huge XTC fans, and those albums are just, you know, one song segues into the next. It all makes sense. There's a common thread that goes through it. I love those types of albums. Which is to say that we always try to concentrate on making an album. A lot of bands now say, what's the point? What's the point making an album? Just put out singles once a month. Well, you can do that. And then at the end of the year, you got 12 songs and you put the album out. I'm always conscious of what the album is going to sound like from start to finish. And I know I need this type of song here. And I know I want to segue from this song into this song. So that's something we work really hard on. And honestly, if it falls on deaf ears, which often it does, to the masses at least, just the creation of art is the reason why I do what I do. And that's why I'll never retire. And, you know, I get such satisfaction out of it. So.
I love that. What's your thoughts on that as far as how music is released today? Like, it's all like streaming now. So it's not like back when Villains was out, like the main type of media was, you know, CDs or cassettes or whatever.
Right.
And you had to go out there and get the fans. Now it's just like, it's more about views. We were talking about that last night a little bit.
There's, I mean, I've got my own thoughts on streaming. I'm, it's very frustrating that, you know, 4 million streams of The Freshman, I get a check for $200, you know, it's you can't, musicians can't survive on that. But the good things about streaming are the accessibility. I stream. I mean, I've got Apple Music. I felt like if you can't beat them, you know, join them. And so I'm guilty of it too. Also, I don't like clutter. So I'm, you know, I have my vinyl and my CDs and everything I toss anyway. I tossed them out. Cassettes are making a big comeback too. And I tossed all our cassettes out like an idiot. You know, the accessibility is what's great. The immediacy of social media is terrific because I could write a song this morning and record it in a home studio and have it out that night and just get a reaction from, you know, thousands of people right away and know if I'm going in the right direction to satisfy the fans or know that, you know, if you're trying to, you know, have a song to pull people back in, or if you're just trying to be artistic, I can release something and never have to think about it again because it was in my head for months and now it's out there, you know?
So. Right. Wow. Well, you know, speaking of, you mentioned Freshman. I know that's a song you probably like. Yep. I know that song. But the thing is, talking about media, TikTok there for a while, I even got in on the trend. Like I sang it, sang along to you in harmony in the car, and I filmed myself doing it.
Nice.
Everybody got nostalgic for a Freshman, and younger people started to find the song. So that's right. Another thing about the social media platforms is a song could come right back.
It's great. You know, I had no expectation on TikTok. I was just making silly TikToks. I made it this fake feud with Rob Thomas. It's so fun. It's such a blast because, you know, Rob's the nicest guy in the world. Known him for years. Super nice. But it's just me. It's essentially me being jealous all the time. It's like you think fucking Rob Thomas has to pack his own groceries in his car and all that kind of shit, you know. He doesn't, by the way. I know he doesn't, fucker. People do everything for him.
The feud is real.
Yeah. But the thing is like you need a niche on TikTok, and that took off for us in a really funny way. People assume it's a real thing. But I guess what I'm getting at, though, is that was my introduction to TikTok. And suddenly I see that the song is The Freshman is trending. I'm like, holy shit, this is amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, terrific. Suddenly, you know, we're up 400% on our plays and everything, which is an extra $5 or $6 at the end of the month. I don't know. But the scary thing about that, too, is that, you know, I can get myself in a lot of trouble, and I have gotten myself in trouble on social media just by... You know, I did something a few months ago where we needed somebody to do merch. Now, in the 90s, you had street teams and you had, you know, fans that would put up flyers for you. If you remember putting up
flyers. Right, absolutely. Kind of
thing. You know, they come into their town and put up flyers, and all they want to do is hang out with the band at the show. So I post, hey, we're looking for somebody to do merch because I don't know if you guys know this, but venues charge bands 20-25% just to, so you can sell your merch at their venue. So I asked people to do it for free, and holy shit, did I get a rash of vitriol from
you're people. Asking me to do work and you don't want to pay
what
me?
Do you mean you're not going to pay? These guys are fucking assholes, or, you know, they're getting people to work for free. And I'm just like, oh my God, I got to get off social media. Like, this new generation. I don't get it.
What are you doing for me?
Yeah,
and I'm going to do as little as possible to get it.
Exactly. But I'm like, do it for free and hang. You can hang out with the band. We'll buy you dinner. You know,
I would have dreamed for that. Like in the 90s. Yeah,
right.
The Verve.
Especially real fans, you know, like.
But put it out there for people that never would see the band or don't buy your albums. They're all going to jump on it, you know, and glom on it and the negativity. And I think that's the nature of social media. So again, very good sides and very bad sides.
Yeah, no, that's a great topic to do. Songs and then songs in your set list. I want to bring up a couple.
Yeah. Okay.
So that are not as known, like Freshman, obviously everybody has, but like Cup of Tea. Mm. And in Cup of Tea, if you don't mind, can I share an audio clip with you so you can hear what we're going to talk about?
Yeah, of course.
It's the chord progression.
Okay.
In this song. So I'm going to get this queued up here. And this is not live, so I can do this a little bit. It's fun when I'm doing this live and trying to do it like an engineer on the fly. It's always a blast. Come on, share with me. Okay, can you see the screen right now?
Yeah.
All right. So here I'm gonna hit mute real quick so it doesn't echo. And I want to play this clip here. Grizz and I both. This just is an awesome thing. So this is at 2:19 of Cup of Tea. This is not my cup of tea. Oh my God, I could have kept that going, but let me come back here. Those moments we live for, you know, you're talking about the prog or that, and that little chord progression there is something that always
stands out. That ascension of chords just going up and up and up.
Straight out of prog rock. It's a way to lift, the listener into the bridge, you know, which is a whole new section. So finding a way to do that, to me, is the challenge. These are all puzzles. It's puzzle pieces, putting them together. It's a lot of times, for instance, with that song, originally the melody was going to be that guitar riff. I was singing, I'm going around the house singing, I don't ever want to do this. I'm not done. You know, very Broadway and lame. And I thought, shit, I got to fix that, you know, and then made it the guitar riff. But that's what happens. And that's what's fascinating to me and keeps me interested in writing more than listening, even, you know, I'm much more interested in a way to connect the dots for a particular song. And if it, in order to connect the dots from one song, I got to pull puzzle pieces from another song, I'll do that until it's right. Sometimes it doesn't work. So, I mean, frankly, most times it doesn't work. And that's why we pull our hair out as songwriters and artists, is we need to find a way. But the thrill of putting the last piece in the puzzle, me, when I was a kid, it's all I did was puzzles. I loved doing puzzles all the time. And it makes sense to me, because putting that last piece of the puzzle in and going, fucking A, I did that. I put it together and I made it work. That's how I feel about songs. And that's how I feel about our albums. And again, some pieces you force. And it's not quite right, you know, and I've got, like I said, I probably got more of those than the ones that actually work. But when they work, Cup of Tea worked. A lot of those songs off Villains worked. And sometimes you need a great producer to get you to that place to say, no, that doesn't work, or that works, you know. And we did. Jerry Harrison was terrific for that reason. So
that's awesome. I'm having flashbacks because when I in kindergarten. And the reason is there was a puzzle, and this is funny. There was a puzzle, and I had to put it together. All the kids got theirs done, and I wasn't finished yet, and the teacher wouldn't let me go home. And my mom's waiting outside, and I'm getting all frustrated. Oh. She can do it. And I finally put it together. It's almost like that teacher was like a producer, because he's like, you're just not done yet.
Yeah. I had plenty of those teacher producers. In fact, our follow-up record, we worked with Michael Beinhorn, who produced, you know, Holes, one of the Hole records. He produced Super Unknown, Soundgarden, which is why we got him in the first place. We wanted to be a more rock and band than Freshman was. Yeah. And so we worked with Michael Beinhorn. And, you know, typically working on an album is 3 months. And this took 9 months. Our budget was $400,000 or something in New York for 3 months. So our follow-up record was $1.2 million to make an album. Our first album, by the way, was $5,000, the very first debut album. Perfectly fine sounding record, but we worked with Michael Beinhorn, who just took us to the mat. I mean, he was so fucking hard to please, that guy. And that was, you know, that was something we had to go through. Unfortunately, the album was a huge failure. But it's one of those things that's like, it's like Pinkerton ends up being for Weezer. You get a real, a certain amount of fans who absolutely love it and will do a show dedicated to that particular album and sell it out like that, you know, because some people love that record. It just wasn't a commercial success, you know.
Oh, you make a great analogy there, because I remember the Blue album, everybody was just obsessed with Pinkerton comes out and go, what did they do? That was the first reaction.
I mean, honestly, like that album was not as interesting as the Blue album to me, because I really love pop songs. The Pinkerton was a real stretch for me. I actually appreciated the Rentals more. When the Rentals came, friends with Pete, you know, I love that album more. You know, I kind of gravitated toward Matt Sharp. I think it was Matt Sharp, right? His band. He was the big band Weezer. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, no.
Fans can be fickle.
Yeah, of course. Well, I mean, there's an expectation too when you, for instance, you know, when we did the Freshmen, we can address the Verve and Verve Pipe for a second, if you don't mind.
Oh, the Bittersweet Symphony band.
Yeah. So when we did the Freshmen, you know, we had a lot of teen fans. You know, freshmen in high school. You know, freshmen in college, freshmen in high school. So a lot of underage, you know, kids would be, you know, buying our stuff and getting on our message boards and all that stuff, you know. And it was, there's a clear difference between that and the Verve, who were much more of a credible band. Bittersweet Symphony wasn't a song that was necessarily a teen favorite. And so on their message boards, they would get teenagers who would come in and go, oh my God, I love, you know, they're squealing over the Freshmen, which probably drove them crazy, I'm sure. And with us, you know, we would get the Bittersweet Symphony people, and I'd be like, yeah, all right, cool. You know, why not? You know,
that is funny.
So what I'm saying is, I guess, is it depends on when you get a fan base like Weezer did when Weezer first came out. You know, you get a wide reach. You've got an amazing album, but there's, you know, the Sweater songs on there. The Buddy Holly's on there was super catchy.
It Ain't So. Oh, my God.
It Ain't So. Brilliant songs. And they probably attracted a lot of fans who would not, you know, who would not go for something more musical, you know, less pop. And it was the same with us. You know, we lost a lot of fans after the Freshmen.
I'm sure it has a lot to do with the climate of the music during the time period when you're putting it out too, because, you know, that alternative rock music was huge right at that point. And then they go into something else, you know, that sounds different, and everyone's like, eh.
Well, consider this, you know, if Weezer were an unknown band now, and they were to release that Blue album, you have to wonder
right.
if it would be successful, because nobody wants to hear a bridge anymore. You know what I mean? Nobody wants to hear an interesting chord, you know.
Yeah.
You want to hear straightforward 4/4, you know, bullshit. And it's like, don't put anything interesting in there for me, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I mean that. And so I wonder if their album or a lot of those albums in the 90s would be successful. I mean, think about Mudhoney. Think about these other bands. Think about Dinosaur Jr. All this stuff. Where
Junior,
it was so great, and you just loved it. And would, if they were a debut band now, would they survive? Doubtful.
No,
probably not.
Jay Mascis was so unique. I don't see it happening.
Yeah.
Well, with a few minutes left, let me just ask you a couple more things. I did want to bring up this cover you're doing live, because when I saw it on your set list, I went, really, you're taking on this song? Okay. I've actually got a clip of you performing it in Ann Arbor.
Yeah.
It's phenomenal.
It's incredible.
Thank you. Which song are you talking about?
Life on Mars.
Oh, yeah. Life on Mars. Yeah. I love
Holy
it.
Holy.
I got chills.
Yeah. I got chills.
Me and Don went to it last night, and we were blown away.
I think my note literally said, holy shit.
Nice.
Yeah. Oh, that was your note?
Yeah, that was my note.
I want to play a little bit of this with you here, Ryan. And it's a good recording, or else I wouldn't do it. You'd be like, oh,
that's... Thank you.
No, it's solid.
Song, by the way.
What's that?
Not an easy song.
No.
No, it's not. It's not at all. Let me do this. Just waiting for the screen to pop up. So here it is. I can't, and you sound, I mean, Bowie would be so proud. I'm telling you.
Oh, I appreciate that.
I'm dead serious. Definitely. All right, here we go. I'm going to hit mute here. All right. So then this again on the current tour, Brian Van Ark and the Verve Pipe do a cover of Life on Mars. This is from them in their home area of Ann Arbor, Michigan. This is just incredible.
It's a god of a small affair to the girl in the messy hair. And her mommy is yelling no, but her daddy has told her to go. But her friend is nowhere to be seen, so she walks through a sunken dream to the seat with the clearest view. She's hooked to the silver screen, but the film is a saddening bore, 'cause she's seen it 10 times or more. She can split in the eyes of four as they ask her to focus on sunrise, fighting in the dance hall. Oh man, look at those cavemen go. It's the freakiest show.
That's just worth the price of admission right there, let alone all the great Verve Pipes. Like, geez, Brian, you're note holding there.
Oh, yeah.
Earlier in the summer, I was hosting on Deep Tracks, and I put out a question to the listeners of what's your favorite Bowie song. That actually came in. Number one, that was the most cited song.
I mean, it's just, it satisfies everything I want to hear. You know what I mean? It's got a lyric that's a little ambiguous, you know. It's got dynamics, it's got drama, it's right at the top of my range. I mean, when you look for a song to cover, a lot, you know, we'll play that and it'll go over people's heads too. Shockingly. Like, people won't know what that is or think it's on the new album or something. They'll be like, well,
I knew it. As thing. We get older.
Yeah. But it satisfies everything that I love in doing a cover, you know. I mean, that's the reason to do it, because it turns us on. We're wearing our heart on our sleeve there. We're just saying, this is who we are, you know, we're showing our colors. This is what we love. And if you get it, you get it. You guys clearly get it, you know. We've always done that with cover songs. We'll do odd covers, but that one in particular is one of our favorites to do for sure.
The harmonies there. What's the first?
Total goosebumps.
Channing and Lou, our guitarists, they're terrific singers as well. Brad, my brother Brad, who formed the band with me, is a great singer too. So we can do 4-part.
Wow, you can hear it.
So fun. It's so fun.
Oh, my God. Well, everybody, I'm telling you right now that they will be on September 30th in Sandy Springs, Georgia, the Bluestone Arts and Music Festival. Then in Dean's neck of the woods, and Grizz, kinda, Charlotte, North Carolina, October 1st, the Knight Theater.
Yeah, I was telling Don I'm going to Charlotte Friday, and I was thinking about going Sunday because I wanted to see Toad. Then I'm looking at your calendar. It's like, oh, wow. Okay. Verve Pipes there with Toad. So now I'm thinking about heading back into Charlotte on Sunday.
Oh, nice. It'd be good to see you. Yeah, that'll be a fun show. Bill Simsix is in North Carolina. You guys know Bill? He produced all the Eagles records. And
didn't he work on Mickey Thomas?
Yeah, he worked
on Elvin Bishop.
Alvin Bishop, you're right. Yeah. Fooled around and fell
in. We just had Mickey on. That's why it stuck in my head, because he was talking about Bill Simcic and Fooled Around and Fell in Love and how they recorded it.
Yeah, Bill's a terrific producer. He produced a couple of my solo records, and we've been friends ever since. So he'll be out there. We're going to do a little tribute to him. I think Seven Bridges Road, a little bit, some harmonies. Something ridiculous. But anyway, that'll be good. Charlotte's going to be a good show.
I think you just sold Dean again. You just said Seven Bridges Road. Yeah.
Another song that's not that easy.
Harmonies. Whew.
Beautiful, right?
Wow. And I noticed on some of the, at least the last shows you did, you closed with a Fleetwood Mac song.
Yeah, we do that because we do our own version of The Chain. Yeah, we've been doing that for years. We do a heavier version, real hard rock. Not super hard rock, but, you know, a more rockin' version that, without the acoustic guitar. And that seems to go over, too. And it's fun for us because people love it, you know. So
yeah. See what you get. It's worth the price.
One of your songs, right?
And you also get Toad the Wet Sprocket. I mean, it's not just like the you're getting two phenomenal bands.
Yeah, it's a good – this is a good bill. I mean, yeah. Honestly, if you're going to drop, you know, I mean, tickets today are, you know, I don't know what these tickets are, but you always 40 to 60.
Well, they're not Taylor Swift prices.
Yeah. I wish they were, frankly.
I can't believe some people are like, they're going all three nights. I'm like, that's like $5,000.
That's real money. You know what I mean? Wow. It's crazy to me.
How about she shows up at an event, or she goes with the Travis Kelce, and his merch sales went up 400% on his jersey.
It's ridiculous. I think it's really funny TikToks too, with women that are going up that they're saying to their husband, "Hey, do you know this Kelce? You know this guy? Apparently, he's going to blow up now, honey, because Taylor is like, what do you mean blow up? Winning Super Bowls isn't enough."
Yeah, I know. Right. Right? He's only like one of the greatest tight ends in NFL history right now, but no. Well, Brian, thank you for waking up with us and taking time out of your life to be here.
Of course, guys, this is the kind of conversation I love to have. I don't get this very often, where you get to talk to people who understand music and love music and ask the right questions. So thank you.
No, absolutely.
It's been a pleasure.
Have a great rest of your day, Brian.
Thanks, guys. Take care. Thanks.